Now it's time for Jazz Notes, and Alan Shipton begins a week-long survey of the traditional West Coast jazz scene based around San Francisco, which divided the jazz world from the 1940s and 50s right up to today.
One of the most famous sounds of the city of San Francisco is the dinging of its cable cars which run through downtown. But for jazz lovers, San Francisco has always meant this.
Out of this world. It was like no other band. It wasn't even like the way bands played in the 20s. It was a completely unique approach. I used to read things where they were accused of, you know, copying note for note the King Oliver band, which of course they didn't do. If you listen to the records, they never copied solos or arrangements. None of those guys in that band played in the style of any of those players. They all were their own, which I thought was a great thing.
They wanted a piano player that played ragtime and that could play solos, because the band played so much ensemble music that they needed to rest once in a while.
Everybody thought Jelly Roll Morton was a bakery shop. And they thought it was a quaint name, Louis Armstrong and the Hot Five. This was in the 30s around the Union here, and this was just hearsay as far as talking to jazz musicians. They never cared or were interested in the past, the history of the music of the country.
Waters, Yerba Buena Jazz Band, and Georgia Camp Meeting, plus the voices of West Coast traditionalists John Gill, Pete Clute, and the Yerba Buena's own clarinet player, Bob Helm. There are few moments in jazz history that have ignited such passionate arguments as the jazz revival of the 1940s, and in this week's programmes I'll be exploring that movement and its present-day legacy. Trumpeter Lou Waters, trombonist Turk Murphy, and a cluster of fellow West Coast big band musicians decided to form a small group in 1939 to recapture the spirit of King Oliver and Jelly Roll Morton's music, rather than the sweet, syrupy swing of the time. In doing so, they started something that divided critics and fans into those who derided their music as mouldy fig conservatism and those who found the surging power of brass, banjo and tuba irresistible. Interestingly, the revival movement began amongst musicians who were already accomplished swing and big band players. And why? Because, according to Bob Helm, playing swing was just too dull.
It was in the 30s, and it was a swing era, and some of the arrangements got pretty boring. repetitive to play them four or five times a night and six nights a week. And so everybody, the jazz musicians, felt sort of confined to playing these charts in the ballrooms. There were about seven ballrooms in the Bay Area at that time and numerous nightclubs and where you usually played acts in the major nightclubs, and that got pretty boring. So in order to blow off steam, somebody discovered this place in the canyon over the Berkeley Hills, and it was obscure enough so you didn't have a lot of dropping in musicians playing all different styles. And so we used to gather there after 2 o'clock after the nightclubs had closed, and go up and blow off steam there. And they would, if they had enough people, the owners would keep the place open, have a barbecue, and close the doors and leave the bar open. And so it was a gathering place for jazz musicians. It was Lou and Turk and I who started the Yerba Buena Band. And at that time, World's Fair was in progress, 1939, and we were rehearsing, and we'd always talked about, wouldn't it be great to play a job and play all jazz and not have to play any pop tunes, and maybe a condescension for the pop hits a day here and there, maybe a tango or a rumba, and if worse comes to worse, a waltz and a polka maybe, but in order to hold a job, but primarily the music would be jazz music and things that we liked, two and three strain tunes and four strain tunes and tunes that didn't pall. If they had to play them two or three times a night, they would be fresh because of the variety of the strains of the music and a big enough library to keep them going stale. So that was a dream. It took a while for it to work out.
Waters' Yerba Buena Band, doggedly recreating the Red Onion Jazz Babies' Cakewalking Babies from Home. Although the members of Waters' band weren't all that much far apart in age from the first generation of jazz musicians, Lou himself, for example, was only 10 years younger than Louis Armstrong, there was a real difference to be heard between their music and what was being played by a collection of New Orleans pioneers under the leadership of Kid Ory down the coast in Los Angeles. One friend of the Waters band who heard them, a man who went on to run his own traditional jazz club in the Bay Area, as we'll hear tomorrow night, was Charlie Campbell. I asked him what he'd made of Ory.
Yeah, I knew Ory pretty well. I didn't like him very much, personally. But I knew the band and the guys, and Mutt Carey and Buster Wilson especially. Before that, in Los Angeles, for me, there was nothing we refer to as trad jazz available. And my heroes were Nat King Cole and Art Tatum, and music like that I'd try to go hear. Then Ory gotten together, mostly by Mary Lee Stewart, to engineer this, putting this band together at a club on Hollywood Boulevard. It was marvelous to go hear those guys. Papa Mutt Carey was, just, to me, a total change from the trumpet players I'd been hearing, and I did not get along with it. I didn't like that staccato, Natty Dominic type of trumpet player at first, and I loved it. It was terrific. And he was too, and we got to know the musicians very well.
Madame Pedro, ça t'a pépé, puis laquelle a commencé, tout par le genre, tout par le monde. Madame Pedro, tout plein concon, c'est l'autre concon.
Hey, dame!
On a dit très bon.
Hey, dame!
Il parle même vous.
Hey, dame!
Madame Pedro, tout plein concon. Madame Pedro, tout pas bon. Madame Pedro, tout plein concon. Tout parlons genre, tout parlons mort. Madame Pedro, tout plein concon. C'est l'autre concon.
Hey, dame!
On l'a dit très bonne.
Hey, dame!
Je parle aimez-vous.
Hey, dame!
Madame Pedro, tout plein concon.
Well, you had the good fortune as well in Los Angeles to bump into a man who did make some records here with the Lou Waters band, Bunk Johnson.
Yes, that was one episode. Bunk came down from here with Bill Colburn, as you know him. Mm-hmm. Bill Colburn was an aficionado of the Yerba Buena band and sort of a self-proclaimed manager of the band. And he came down to Los Angeles with Bunk. I'd heard about Bunk, and so Bunk said, I hear Ory's in town. This is before Ory had the band, that band I referred to. He was in a place called a Tiptoe Inn on East Los Angeles. And this was during the war. I was in uniform. I was stationed nearby in a sailor suit. And we went out there. The hours of a band music was 8 to 12. At midnight, everything was shut down. So we got out there about 8:30. And Bunk said, no, I'm not going to bring my horn. So we get out there, and he starts talking to Ari. He says, and they knew each other, of course, from New Orleans. And Bunk says, kid, do you remember the last time I saw you? I said, no, I don't remember, Bunk. Well, it was the 4th of July. It was about 2 p.m. in 1914. You were in the back of a wagon, and I was on the sidewalk, and I yelled at you, hey, kid. Ari said, that's right. And Ori was playing string bass. He didn't have his trumpet. So it was a young trumpet player, and Bunk started talking to him, and what's your name? Where are you from? Well, Louisiana, New Iberia. Bunk says, I knew your mama. Bunk wanted to play. We had to go back to the hotel in town, bring him back, get it with his trumpet. And I never heard him before or since. That's the only time I ever heard him. I was absolutely devastating. He was incredible. My loudest sounding trumpet player in those days was Harry James. Bunk sounded louder and, of course, far better than Harry James. God, he was incredible. And Ori was virtually in tears. That was the one only time I saw Bunk, and here there were the two of these legends from New Orleans.
The legendary Bunk Johnson, back in San Francisco during that West Coast trip of his in 1944, with members of Lou Waters' band, notably Ellis Horn on clarinet and Turk Murphy on trombone. A couple of years or so before that, Waters had opened the first of many clubs to create a venue where he and his band could play their kind of music regularly. It was called the Dawn Club, and I suggested to Bob Helm that this was where the Yerba Buena band had really started to coalesce into something unique.
Yes, I would say so. But in the beginning, we only played there one night a week and did well. But in the beginnings, the audience was enthusiastic, but they didn't know the names of the tunes. So we had a a flashboard on the bandstand that flashed Foxtrot Waltz and the name of the tune and the composer. And finally, we noticed that that got some favorable response, so we started to do the old salon group string quartet. Here's the program at the door. We had passed out the program of five sets for the evening.
One thing that I've seen in photographs of the Dawn Club is the rather unorthodox way that the band used to line up, with the rhythm section in the front and you guys at the back. Why did that?
Well, there was a reason for that. I'm glad you asked. The rhythm section had a tendency to get lethargic on the slow tunes. This had an effect on the front line, which was usually standing in front. So, Lou thought, well, perhaps they're not quite hearing what we're trying to do in the front line, so let's put the rhythm section in front and put the horns in back and blowing over their heads on a tier so it wouldn't be directly behind them. And it did help, but the band at that time was suffering from that same problem of the lethargy, and then the fast tunes, sometimes they would speed up. And in order to try to conquer that problem, this was tried as a means of doing it. And I think it helped a little bit.
Of Come Back Sweet Papa, recorded by Lou Waters in 1942. Around that time, Bob Helm left the band after he and Turk Murphy quarrelled with Lou over the dragging of the rhythm section. Turk only left for a short period, but Bob didn't rejoin until he returned from war service in Europe. The original lineup got back together in 1946, and before long they started a series of recordings at the Avalon Ballroom here in San Francisco.
We made those all on the West Coast label, over a telephone wire.
Well, that's quite an unorthodox way of recording, wasn't it? Because
yes,
the studio was in one place, yes, and the actual recording equipment in another.
Well, the reason for that telephone line transmission was the photo and sound studios was just across the street from the Palace Hotel, and they were one of the most up-to-date of the studios, and everybody liked their sound system. And the only way we could put this together, we liked the sound of the Avalon Ballroom, which had a good, not too much echo, but just enough to give it a live sound. And of all the ballrooms we played in around the Bay Area, we selected that one. The problem was how to transfer the microphone, the pickup, down to photo and sound. So I know before we got wise to it, we were interrupted, I don't know how many times, in the middle of a tune, which would have been a take. It was an enthusiastic track, and the phones had ring right in the middle of it, so we'd have to go over again. And finally got wise, and the Avalon had about six phones, I guess, and people would call in during the session. And so we had to stuff the phones every time we had a session there also. Telephone wire, Ma Bell was not exactly hi-fi in those days either, so that was a problem. However, after several transformations, the new CDs that came out last year or the year before were a great improvement. I don't know how they were able to get that sound, but I never liked the sound of the clarinet on those records. To me, it sounded terrible, out of key, off mic, and I wasn't really happy until Nestle Erdogan had remastered them on an LP, and that was a little bit better, but I said, well, if there's my career in the music business, down the drain.
Thank you.
Tiny Street Rock, named after the location of the Dawn Club, and recorded in May 1946 over a phone wire for the West Coast label, from the penultimate session by the original lineup of the Yerba Buena Jazz Band. That lineup was Lou Waters, who took a rare solo there, and Bob Scobie on trumpets, Bob Helm, clarinet, Turk Murphy, trombone, Wally Rose, piano, Harry Mordecai, banjo, Dick Lammy, tuba, and Bill Dart, drums. And tomorrow night, I'll be following the subsequent careers of Bob Scobie and Turk Murphy, and looking into the whole sequence of improbably named clubs where the revivalists played, starting with Lou Waters' own venue, Hambone Kelly's.
And Alan Shipton returns at the same time tomorrow night with another edition of Jazz Notes. That's at 11:30.